Now playing in Los Angeles, exquisite food and drink, world-class art everywhere, spectacular sports, dazzling Hollywood attractions. L.A. offers the full variety of food scene, from game-changing taco trucks to 35 Michelin stars. And did you know that Los Angeles has more museums and theaters than New York City? Get your fix in music, film, comedy, and world-class museums. Plus, get behind the scenes in movie magic with a world-famous studio tour. That's something that should be on everyone's bucket list. Start here with discoverla.com.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.
Hello.
Hi, Rob.
Have we ever really truly crossed paths?
We haven't, but I know you spent a lot of time growing up here, and so did I. I'm from here.
Beverly Hills High School, come on.
I try to keep that on the DL because it kind of undermines any credibility you hope to have.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Or if you're a first timer, welcome, period, to Literally With Me, Rob Lowe. Every once in a while doing this podcast, I get to do something really, really special for me. And that is meet someone on the podcast I've never met and always admired and felt like they're in my life, like in the DNA of my life from like some of my earliest memories. And now I'm finally getting to meet them and ask them everything I've ever wanted to know. And today is Lorraine Newman. And I cannot tell you, well, you know, if you listen to the podcast, what a huge Saturday Night Live fan I am, particularly of the glory years. I mean, I'm just having images of Lorraine in my head from those years, even as we speak. And she's got an audiobook out right now, which goes over all of it, which I'm going to be downloading immediately, called May You Live in Interesting Times. So enough with my blabbing. Let's get to, I get to meet Lorraine Newman. Yay! Every high school in LA has kind of a different reputation. What was Beverly Hills High School like when you were, I'm Santa Monica High School.
Well, I don't know what kind of reputation Beverly had. I went there in the 60s. So it was the Vietnam War. And it was like the beginning of like the British invasion and, you know, bands like The Doors and Three Dog Night played our high school.
No way.
Yes.
My first girlfriend, my first love, you know, everybody has that first love, was the lead singer of Three Dog Night's daughter.
Ooh.
So Corey Wells, who was the lead singer of Three Dog Night. It was his daughter, who was also named Corey Wells, go figure. Three Dog Night, they were so good.
Their sound, I love their sound. To this day, I still love it.
But the Doors also played your high school?
Yeah.
Was Jim Morrison like, love me two times, hey, you little girl in the poodle skirt?
Not quite poodle skirts. No, we got to wear, it was when the dress code was abolished, so we could wear jeans to school, which was great. I loved that. But I've lived a time, Rob, when you had to wear a skirt or a dress.
Did they measure the skirts? Because my kids went to to school where they had to have uniforms, and they would come out with and measure the skirts like over the knee and stuff like that.
Yeah, the girls would roll them up so they'd be mini skirts.
And so were there famous people's kids in the school? Had to have been, right?
Yeah, I went to school with Monty Hall's kids. Richard Hall was in my grade. He was class president, and his sister, Joanna Hall, who is now Joanna Gleason, is Monty Hall's daughter.
Had no idea. Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, she was in all the school musicals, having, you know, a completely professional voice, you know, and performance style even then. I'm trying to think, you know, a lot of character actors, kids.
Was the Candace Bergen, were the Bergen kids in there?
She's quite a bit older than I am, but we lived across the street from her.
Ah.
And down the street from Kirk Douglas, we used to live across the street. We moved around a lot because my mother liked to design houses. And then when she was done, she'd be bored and we'd move again. So we lived in a lot of spots. And yeah, we lived across from Groucho Marx and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you see Groucho? Would you like wave to Groucho in the morning as he was getting his mail?
He was at that point really too old to be getting around, you know?
Yeah.
So no, I did not say howdy neighbor. Oh, I lived next door also to one of the Bowery boys. I think it was Leo Gorcy.
Jesus.
And his sister. His sister would hang out in front, and they had like one of those white rock gardens in the front of the house.
Oh yeah, I remember those.
And she was such a character. She was really like a female Bowery boy, and she talked like that too. You know, quit taking those rocks, kids.
Jesus.
She was a character.
Beverly Hills was I just remember that those kids, as I was growing up, were way more civilized. We were like savages at Santa Monica High School, or SAMO, as they used to say.
Were you also near the beach? And that's kind of wilderness, pretty much.
Well, this was the urban jungle.
Yeah, it was Rodeo Drive and the Daisy Club. And
the Daisy.
What was it else? It was Jack's, J-A-X. That was a clothing store. I would see like Robert Culp in there shopping. And your listeners will not know any of these names I'm putting
this,
down.
No, this is the best. I love the old school references. And I knew you were Queen of the Groundlings, legendary, but I didn't realize you were in the establishing original, the OG Groundlings.
One of the OG, founding members of the Groundlings when we were just a workshop, an improv workshop in a theater off of Vermont. And that was at the time when I hung out with my artist boyfriend, and he would eat at this diner called Duke's, which was right underneath the Tropicana Motel. And
yes,
it was, you know, family-style seating. And at the time, we became friends with our table mates, and it would be people like George Memley and, you know, Martin Scorsese and Don Simpson when he was still a writer before he was producing with Jerry Bruckheimer. Mm. And, God, Iggy Pop and Tom Waits. I mean, they were just, it was breakfast.
Duke's was an amazing, I'm surprised, well, once they tore the Tropicana down, I guess they tried to do Duke's on the Sunset Strip, and it was never the same, right? And it never caught on.
Right.
I caught Duke's just at the end, and Chasen's.
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, and there's really never been anything like either one of those places, ever. Duke's was always, I think everybody, well, listen, it was breakfast, so a lot of people were hungover. It definitely had a hungover vibe to it, right?
I don't know. If they did, I was oblivious to that.
I can promise you Iggy Pop had a hungover vibe.
Yeah, probably. And Tom Waits for sure. That's just a given.
And Martin Scorsese in the 70s, I mean, he wouldn't have been hungover. No.
I got to see a screening of Mean Streets before he had the music on it.
So this was really super early.
Oh, yeah. It was before Mean Streets was released.
Jeez.
So he was screening it for his friends. And then I invited him to see a Groundlings show before we were the Groundlings. And Valerie Curtin was part of our group, and she had been in the San Francisco committee and then was in this group, and she was also writing partners with Barry Levinson, who was in a group called the Step Brothers at the newly opened Comedy Store, blah, blah, blah. But he saw her in our show and hired her for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
That was such a great era.
Yeah.
That was the era that made me want to be an actor. It was before corporations and big money found that there was potentially big money in this.
Yeah, well, it was before the youth market in film. Certainly it was there for music and fashion, but the youth market had not quite attached itself to film yet. You know, you begin to have auteurs like, you know, making movies like Bob and Carol, Ted and Alice, and, you know, Elliot Gould as a private eye.
Elliot Gould, the most unlikely movie star.
I agree.
The most unlikely movie star ever. And the MASH and then one other movie he had that was like he was the biggest star in the world.
I know. Isn't that interesting? And that could only have happened at that time.
Can you imagine Elliot Gould in a Marvel movie? Like his in his prime. Elliot in his prime as a young man. He's the biggest movie star in the world. What would Elliot Gould, would he carry the hammer? Like Thor? Would that be his move?
Oh my God. He would be accountant man.
He'll push a pencil up a mountain and find fraud.
Although he was so good in Ocean's 11, there's one scene where he has a line where he's trying to talk in code in front of someone. And he says to George Clooney, you know, the thing with the guy in the place. And I never forgot that line. I always use it.
He's so funny. So Groundlings.
Yes. So we were a workshop and then we decided, well, we would do these scene nights. And here's the other people that were in our group. It was Tony Burton, who played, he was in the first Rocky movie. He was one of the trainers. Pat Morita, who was, Mr. Miyagi. Jack Sue. Tim Matheson.
I love Tim.
Yeah, he's great. Yes, I have known him that long. And it's such a 6 degrees of SNL in the sense that, like, Valerie Curtin is Jane Curtin's cousin, you know, and Tim ended up playing the role that was written for Chevy in Animal House. It's just all connected, Rob.
It is. So how did you meet the great Lorne? Tell me, please, the first time you laid eyes on him.
Well, we were doing our show at the Groundlings, and Lorne was producing a Lily Tomlin special, and they needed some people to fill out the cast. And so he and Lily came to our show.
Wow.
And they hired me from that. And that was amazing because I met people like Rosie Schuster, who became an SNL writer, and Marilyn Legend. Miller, who became an SNL writer, and Valerie Bromfield, who is absolutely brilliant and was Dan Aykroyd's partner in Canada, performing partner, and in Second City.
So Saturday Night Live had, you know, in a way, it was so ahead of its time in so many areas, but one of them is how many smart, powerful women who were the backbone of the show. I mean, it was always a boys' club.
It wasn't. It wasn't. Not from my perspective. It was a meritocracy. And I think it still is. Whatever's really working the best goes in the show. Whatever's funny. So the only thing was a numbers situation where we had 3 women writers and 10 male writers. And, you know, people like Al Franken would make an effort to write like a female-centric sketch, which I always admired. But it was just, you know, a numbers thing. So you just had more things written by men, but it wasn't that the women were edged out or anything or discouraged.
What, do you remember the first show? Well, how did Lorne, when Saturday Night came along, how was it pitched to anybody? Like, what was the description?
He told me it would be a cross between Monty Python and 60 Minutes.
Of course he said that.
And this was in 1974, and Monty Python was not showing in Los Angeles. I had never heard of them. I never saw them.
It's going to be a show you've never heard of, Lorraine, but one day you will. And, of course, 60 Minutes, which, as everyone knows, is hilarious.
It's hilarious. It is hilarious. But, yeah, he had me meet him at the Chateau Marmont out of the pool. And he told me what this show was going to be, and it was going to be for 13 weeks. With a 5-year option, like that'll ever happen, you know. And that was it. And I I was really, I had no idea, and I didn't want to go to New York. God, did I not.
And you're how old? You're how old, 21?
I'm 23. I was 22 when I did the Lily show.
Okay.
And
right.
23 when I was hired for SNL.
Jesus.
And a very young 23, Rob. And I'm still a young 69, by golly. But
you are.
The prospect of going to New York was not thrilling for me. I was scared, you know, and I didn't know anybody. And first night we were there, the third night we were there, the car was stolen.
Welcome to New York.
That we drove in with all my stuff and my written material and costumes for my characters. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And, you know, Lorne wanted me to mount a show for the writers because he was the only one who knew what I did. He was the only one who had seen me at the Groundlings.
So you just had to, you had to go out and find this, find new clothes and write new stuff? Or did you, I mean, you just did it. You had to.
I didn't need the costumes, but what I did need was the actual material because I hadn't performed it all over the summer. It had been like 3 months. And I didn't have it memorized. I didn't have these things memorized. These were like character monologues that had been crafted and honed over a period of time. So, you know, I didn't have like the connective tissue that led me from one moment to another. And it was a terrible feeling. Oh, my God. And it was not my best foot forward, I can say. Mortifying.
It's not the same, but I once had a car broken into. And they, one of the things that was stolen was the only copy of a screenplay I'd been working on.
Oh.
And that's the only reason that you've never heard of that screenplay. By golly, if it had only been. Is there anybody in that cast that you remember seeing the first time you saw them? Because there's certain people in life, like I've known forever, but I don't remember the first time that I met them or saw them. And they're very, very important to me. And then there are others who I might not know that well, but I remember vividly. In fact, I'm wearing a shirt right now. For those of you who can see this on the podcast, I'm wearing a shirt of Chris Farley.
Aww.
And I remember the very first time I saw Chris. Was there anybody like that for you? Do you remember like meeting Danny Aykroyd? Do you remember Belushi?
I met them all.
Let's trade Belushi stories.
Okay.
I'll tell you the first time I met John and only time I met John. And you tell me.
Well, my story, I only have good experiences with John. He was like the Tasmanian devil. And I would go to the Blues Bar, which was a great place and always reminds me of that scene in Trainspotting where it says, this is the filthiest toilet in Scotland. No, the Blues Bar had the filthiest toilet. But, you know, John every once in a while would drop over at my place and then fall asleep. And I'd have to call his wife, Judy, and say, can you come and get him? He's taking up some room in my bed. But he was I love John. He was a really sweet guy. I mean, I know those words have rarely been associated with him, but he really was.
I get that. He was very, very sweet. I this is the most convoluted and bizarre. This story sounds like a hallucination, but it's real. So, and I'm going to go through it very quickly because it's very Byzantine getting to the end of it, but it's worth it. Trust me. It's the 1977 World Series. I'm there. It's Dodgers, Yankees. My brother's with me. He's much younger than me. He's wearing a Yankees hat and getting hassled at the hot dog line to get hot dog. Hassle, hassle, hassle. Guy comes up and says, hey, back off this kid. Leave this kid alone. We get to talking. He turns out is a member of the Muppets. And invites us to come to see the Muppet movie being filmed. We go to the Muppet movie being filmed. We meet all the Muppets. They're filming the Rainbow Connection sequence. And then they're like, well, Kermit the Frog is hosting the Tonight Show in 2 weeks. Do you want to come to that? And I'm like, the Tonight Show? I'm a young actor. I've never been in anything. I'm probably 13 years old. We go to the Tonight Show. You know, obviously, it's my mom, my stepdad, my brother, and I. And Kermit is hosting, and I have this memory of him sitting on a little chair doing a monologue. And then he had guests and whatever. And then afterwards, there was a party. And I was back there, and Jim Henson was there, and everybody was there. And I looked across the room, and there was Belushi. And I was just staring at him. He was my hero. I mean, you guys taught me everything I ever knew about how to be funny. and I was just a pup, and I watched every episode, and I mean, it was, I still think I kind of know more about those years of SNL than the people who made SNL.
That's possible.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I was looking at John, and he was looking at me, probably because he was wondering, what is a little kid doing at this party? I'm sure that's what he was thinking. And I kind of he was staring at me, and I worked my nerve up, and I went over to him. And I held my hand, and I said, hey, my name is Rob. Hey, kid, how you doing? He was so sweet, so lovely. And he goes, what do you want to do? He asked me. That's the key to this story.
Oh, that's neat.
He asked me, and I said I wanted to be an actor, and his face clouded over. He took a very long time, and he looked me directly in the eyes and said, stay out of the clubs.
Yeah, at that time, clubs meant like Studio 54, and in that sense, I guess I get it. When I first heard you say clubs, I thought you meant like the Comedy Store and the Improv. Yeah. And how would that have any bearing his experience, let alone yours?
No,
even
as a 13-year-old, I knew it was a euphemism for don't do what I've done.
House of the Rising Sun.
Right? Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crewneck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow-knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crewneck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
If I have to think of my all-time favorite, I know you probably hear it all the time, but my all-time favorite vintage SNL runner got to be Coneheads.
Let me tell you the story of Coneheads.
Please.
Before we went on the air, Lorne thought it would be a good idea to have us all do improv at his loft for the cast to bond. We did it twice. It never really kind of, you couldn't achieve that in two weeks. So, but one of the improvs we did was an alien family, and it was Danny, Jane, and me. We all assumed our roles. I did the voice, so we all did that voice. And then we all forgot about it. And then Danny came up with the Coneheads. And so the only thing that we really achieved from the improv was the voice and the family structure. But he created he and Tom Davis created the Coneheads. And Danny, I think, has said that he was inspired by, the statues from Easter Island and this planet Earth and This Island Earth. That was the movie, This Island Earth. People with big foreheads.
Yeah, there's a whole thing. And there's a whole rabbit hole of people with giant skulls that may or may not have been aliens. I had never put that together with the Coneheads, and who clearly loved beer and chips, consumables. They loved that.
Yes, mass quantities.
Mass quantities.
And that's always amazing to me because during the pandemic, I've watched a lot of TV and I've watched a lot of Swedish television. And I've heard things like people say parental units, you know, in Swedish, and mass quantities. And it just blew my mind.
Parental units became, and I know this is another speciality of yours, became Valley Girl, my parental units, they said with no irony. That became like, it wasn't even referential.
Yeah, it might have gotten to the point they didn't know where it came from.
Well, for sure. People for sure go, oh, my parental units are around. They have no idea that it's a Conehead reference.
It's amazing to me.
I remember vividly when they found a Sensa ring under Connie's bed. We're very upset about that.
The shame.
The shame of the Sensa rings. What people forget is Saturday Night Live is live, and what that means is the costume changes are the most fun, nerve-wracking part of doing the show, in my experience. How quick did you get your cone on?
Well, it was always at the top of the show.
Right.
So we had time to put it on, and then we would just tear them off. But they were anchored right between our eyes and at our temples and the base of our necks. And to this day, Jane and I don't have any hair there.
Wow.
It just got ripped off so many times. But that was when I really thought, this is a great job, the day that they had us eating fiberglass and it was made out of cotton candy. I thought, yeah, I'm getting paid to do this. This is great.
And that was a Danny sketch.
So Danny. I mean, there are so many things that, you know, you can just tell Danny's sensibility. There's in my book, I talk about my favorite ensemble sketches, but I also just talk about, you know, my favorite sketches in general. And one of them is Drool Bucket. And it was when Michael Palin was
a pirate ship?
Well, that was the Raging Queen. That was a different, it was the same character, Miles Cowperthwaite. But the first Miles Cowperthwaite sketch was Drool Bucket. And Danny played this, you know, doddering old man who would have fits and drooled excessively. And he had this little tin cup attached to right below his lip to catch the drool. And, you know, Miles Cowperthwaite's job was to empty the drool cup into a bucket.
So good.
You know, it was this like sloshing gray stuff. And the audience was so grossed out. We were pissing ourselves. But, you know, that's so Danny.
I love Danny's Bass-O-Matic. In fact, I did it at my sixth grade talent show. There was that weird Saturday Night Live book that came out that was kind of had a green cover that was meant to look like a notebook.
Yeah, the paperback. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that? So I had that. And Bass-O-Matic is in it, the actual script. So I just memorized it and did it. And to this day, when I run into people from Malibu Park Junior High School, they all remember Bass-O-Matic because it ends with, you know, the drinking of the blended raw bass. That's good bass.
Which it was lobster bisque. It was cold lobster bisque. And then in the 40th anniversary, it was strawberry ice cream. Because it's a good job.
But your book is an audiobook, but is it in print as well? It's just an audiobook right now.
It's not in print. It's just audio.
You want an audiobook from you with the voices. We want the voices. We want your voices.
With the voices. You want the voices.
Do you do voices?
In the book, yeah.
Are you the only person on planet Earth who knows Lauren that doesn't do a Lauren?
I don't really do a Lauren.
Oh.
I do some of his expressions like, no, 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 no. And, you know, you guys didn't know the Lorne that would say exactly. He had gone past that by the time I think all of you knew him.
I remember I was at a dinner with Lorne and Roseanne Barr, and it was the height of Roseanne being Roseanne. And Lorne's like, Roseanne, have you been to the Whitney to see Monet's haystacks? They're breathtaking.
That's a great impression. But I can't say I don't really do a Lorne.
You should get an award. You're one of the best voice actors on the planet. Been there at the beginning, and like, I mean, there are people that did one walk-on on Saturday Night Live and make a career out of doing Lauren.
Yeah, I just end up sounding like Don Pardo.
I think it's you're so sophisticated and so good at it that you will not sully yourself.
That's the reason that I don't, because it's just, if it's not 100%, I don't want to do it.
What does it say about me that voice kind of lights me up a little bit?
Well, the Valley Girl that I did is kind of different than the ones that you hear today, but I bet you would recognize the one that I did, which was, you know, I noticed that like the ing endings would be E-E-N. So it would be like, I'm going to the mall, or I'm thinking, or I'm doing, or words, there's, it has a glottal L. So words like probably would be prolly. And couldn't would be, you know, well, wouldn't be would be want, and shouldn't would be shouldn't, and couldn't would be cunt. And tried to work cunt into a sketch for the 40th, but I chickened out. You know, I was already responsible for one time the censors came down on me for saying pissed off.
How dare you use such a phrase?
It was never said on TV before, little old me.
Wow.
And I did it in dress rehearsal, and the censor at the time was a guy named Herminio Traviesis. And he said, you cannot say that, you know. And Lauren said, just say it on the air.
Amazing.
And I was only too happy to do it, you know, because fuck the man.
Yeah, oh yeah, and, hell of a
But then I got in trouble. You know, they said, we'll put you back on a 5-second delay, which means you're not technically live. So I made myself very apologetic.
Apologetic.
Unctuous.
Bend the knee.
I bent the knee, yeah, but, you know.
To the censor.
They had to know that it wasn't an accident. Because if it was an accident, then they really were dealing with a loose cannon. I had to make it clear that it was a choice that I made.
So it's amazing more of that didn't happen, really.
In terms of language, you know, there's very little that is being left to the imagination. You know, people are saying, fuck.
How come you didn't sue Moon Unit Zappa for copyright infringement for Valley Girl?
Well, because I didn't copyright it. And well, also,
why didn't you copyright it?
Because what did I know? I was so naive. And Frank Zappa actually wanted to do something with that character. He was fascinated by that character. But we just never got around to it. And, you know, I mean, it's, why would I do that?
No,
yes, I was the first Valley Girl and you're welcome. You know, it's not something you want to really own. There was a great episode on NDR about dialects and how they've, you know, migrated from their point of origin and how that their origin in the region that it comes from is a corruption of, you know, whatever British, you know, country that the immigrant came from.
Yep.
I learned that the Boston accent is an affectation. It's not a corruption of an original dialect. It is an affectation because they thought it made them sound classy.
That's amazing. I swear to God.
But they also were talking about the fact that, you know, the Valley speak, so to speak, is now all across the country, that there is so, it's so pervasive.
Oh, yeah, for
sure
it is.
It's just been integrated, you know, everywhere. But I've also noticed people, there's words like instead of by accident, it's on accident.
Yes.
And that drives me out of my mind. I don't know why. It's like, get off my lawn. It's by accident.
It's very important that if you do something on accident, that you say sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Say sorry is one word, right?
Yeah. You say sorry.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
I love that stuff.
You and I need to do a series called Word Archaeologists.
Ooh.
Where we search down, you know, sorry, not sorry, on fleek.
Can I tell you something? I would be so down with that. I'm not kidding because I'm obsessed
with it. Wouldn't
that
be fun?
Well, because all of a sudden it's like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
I'm gobsmacked and I'm thinking of the cornucopia of possibilities.
Well, start making an outline, honey. I'll make notes.
Let's take a quick break.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes
is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Are you in a closet right now? Are those, what's behind you? I'm kind of obsessed with what's behind you. It looks like travel bags of clothes.
It is. I am in my closet, and these are soundproof panels because during the pandemic, I was doing a Netflix series. I was doing actually several shows, and I was recording from here, so it had to be soundproof. So I actually learned how to do all this stuff.
Isn't it funny what the pandemic taught us? I mean, the things that we learned about, that we learned that we're going to continue to do, and the things that we realized, I'm not doing that anymore, no matter what.
Yeah.
I tell you the one thing I'm never doing again. Like, I'm a skier, and I'm never riding on a gondola filled with people again. They pack you into those gondolas, and they're enclosed, and everybody's,
Yeah. That's a thing of the past. There are some things that will literally never be the same.
No.
But I'm also, even at the beginning of the pandemic, I was doing my own grocery shopping. As long as I followed the protocols, I didn't feel like I was going to be at risk. You know, I just
I wasn't at risk because I'm untouchable.
Especially in Montecito.
Yeah. You know, it's been, I'm not sure that I would have enjoyed the podcasting as much as I have been and continue to do had it not been, you know, one of the sole outlets. I mean, during what period did you write the audiobook? Was it recent, or have you been working on it off and on for a while?
I've been working on it off and on for years.
For years?
Yes. And every time I attempted a rewrite, there would be really what I thought was good stuff in it. But then I would kind of hit a wall, whether, you know, the subject matter made me depressed or frustrated, or I couldn't remember, or I would just have, you know, say, this is not interesting. Where am I going? Why am I doing this? So kept going. It kept being put away 9 times. And then I would write a whole lot of other stuff to avoid writing the book. Mm. So I had all this material, and then I got the offer from Audible. So I asked my friend Paul Slansky, who had edited an article I wrote for Esquire when I was still on SNL. And it's what he does. He helped Carrie Fisher with her first book.
Wow.
He helped Norman Lear with his book. That's what he does. And we were just at lunch, and I said, I got an offer from Audible. I'm so disorganized. I don't know how I'm going to do this. He said, well, I'll help you. And boy, did he help me.
Wow.
He helped me cull through it and organize it and get it into, you know, fact check, chronological order.
Wow.
This is boring.
Right. More of this, less of that.
But, you know, the reason for writing the book changed. I don't know how you felt about your book, but the reason changed because I realized that there was a constant in my life, which was that I got to be front row at a lot of the cultural movements of the last 50 years, whether I was a witness to, but in the front row, or an instigator of. And I thought that that would be a really interesting through line of the book.
100%.
So it is.
And that's what it should be. And you're absolutely right. One of the reasons why I wanted to write my book was you know, I was just lucky enough to be right there when that changed forever.
Yes. Yes. The movies that you did were definitely a product of that.
You look back on it and you go, wow, there was a time when the movies were for adults.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Not anymore, darling. We're all doddering old fools.
You have two kids, right?
I do.
Me too.
But they're like yours. They're grown and they're out in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I know that's a cliche, yeah, but it really is.
Same. 100%. And you had that amazing, like, injecting stimuli, mainlining it into your body. And then you go, yeah, like, the blues bar with Frank Zappa and Tom Waits is great and everything. But you know what's really cool? Parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, it's true.
Right?
Yeah, the park and pushing them on a swing and making up games with them. And, you know, improv comes in very handy with children, with small children. They're natural improvisers.
Did they realize how good you were at it and say, Mommy, tell me another story about a shark?
Well, yeah, I painted myself into a corner with that because I also did voices when I would read to them.
Ugh.
And it would be the end of the day when I had already worked at a job and I would be, you know, like, Mommy's off work. Mommy's tired, you know.
Did you ever have this problem when reading books to your kids and doing voices where you forget what voice you'd given that character? And they're like, that's not the voice. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I read it yesterday. What do you want from me?
Honestly, no, that's not happened.
Because you're a professional. It's funny when you go back and read, like, I remember reading Where the Red Fern Grows to my son.
I've never heard of that book.
Oh, it's classic. It's a classic, but it's kind of fallen by the wayside. It was like a total sort of raw-boned, it will make you weep. Like, literally, it's about a boy and his dog. And it's the ultimate boy and his dog, Americana, where they finally talk about where the red fern grows. You're like, why is that the title? And then when they finally get to that at the end, I think it was the first time my kids ever saw me cry.
Really? That's beautiful.
I remember just giving the characters the voices and forgetting like what I'd done. And they're like, what are you doing, Dad? I'm like, but you're a professional. You don't have that problem.
And also the voices are usually different animals. I know what voice I gave the animal.
Yeah.
Like Dinner at the Panda Palace, which, you know, the way I did it was so, would have gotten me canceled big time.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope with voice acting because you're doing a caricature a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
People are sensitive.
Yeah.
And you know what's worse than sensitive people? Sensitive people's managers and agents who are sensitive,
yes,
for them on their behalf when they're not sensitive about it.
Yeah.
Gosh, can you just say, because I really want to go back to that place of my Mazda 626 and my Polo cologne. Oh, it's all coming back to me. My Polo cologne, and I'm listening to George Benson's Turn Your Love Around.
Oh, my God.
Sign us off in that, if you would, because it'll make my day. And you're a Valley Girl.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. And I literally love him. I mean, really, truly love him.
Oh, my God. That was so fun.
That was really fun, Rob.
Wow, that was so fun. I feel like I'm emotionally hungover from that sign off. I need to tell my 15 and a half year old self to calm down. Oh, man, that was fun. Hey, listen out there, y'all. Don't forget to tell two people in your life. If you like this show, tell two people today, and they'll tell two people, and so on, and so on, and so on. That would be really cool if you would do such a thing for us here at Literally. Anyway, today is a very sad day in the Literally world. My producer, Devin, has moved on to greener pastures. I know you thought he had moved on. That's the good news. He has not. He is alive. He is well. He is kicking. And he is doing another podcast. And I wish him all the luck in the world. This was his dream to go and work at this other podcast. And he finally got his dream come true. And that's what happens when you work at Literally. Your dreams come true. And if you listen to Literally, your dreams come true. Unfortunately, his dream was to go work somewhere else. And we're going to miss him. He was instrumental in helping us set the tone of the show, helping me deliver a show that is not super structured and that feels just sort of like you can be a fly on the wall and enjoy what we're talking about. You know, and I think we have a very special voice, and a lot of that is because of what his contributions have been. So onward and upward for Devin. Love ya, and we will carry on here at Literally. Anyway, I will see you next week. More fun to come.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced and engineered by Devin Torrey Bryant and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solotaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Our talent bookers are Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Brett Kahn. And music is by Devin Torrey Bryant.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.